Good evening, and welcome to Outsources, a weekly KGNU program that provides you with content related to the queer community. I'm your host, Sean Kenny, and tonight I'm joined in the studio by Outsources Collective members Janice Bohan, Glenda Russell, Joe Edelstein, and Angela Palermo to discuss the U.S. presidential election and the ways in which it has impacted the LGBTQ community. Our goal tonight is to really explore a mosaic of perspectives and ways of looking at this election and its impact. And listeners, we want to encourage you to call in if you have a question or comment for Outsources Collective members tonight. To call in, just dial 303-442-4242. Well, Glenda, Janice, Joel, and Angela, thanks so much for joining the show tonight.
Thank you.
Good to be here.
I want to start with the lead up to Election Day and how queer issues in the LGBTQ community came up on the campaign trail. How did you notice parties centering or marginalizing LGBTQ issues throughout their campaigns, and to what effect? Glenda, do you want to kick us off tonight?
Sure. I think the answer to that is actually both. I think that both parties centered LGBTQ issues in their platforms, one in a very positive way, and one in a way that was more negative than any prior GOP platform had been. But there wasn't that much talk about LGBTQ issues during the actual campaigns. Certainly, Clinton talked with LGBTQ groups and made references to LGBTQ issues. The topic was not brought up in any of the three debates, to my memory. And so it was sort of, in a funny way, on a back burner somewhere.
Yeah, it felt a little bit like we all knew that Clinton was supportive mostly from Obama's policies and the assumption that those would continue pretty much. And she's been clear about her support anyway. But it certainly wasn't discussed in any programmatic or policy way at all, or in any conflictual way. They didn't have a fight about it either.
The biggest clue, of course, was Donald Trump's selection of a vice president. Pence has a notoriously bad record with LGBTQ issues. He's received 100% rating from the Family Research Council.
And that's a council that has a history of anti-LGBTQ sentiment.
Yes. He has never been a friend to the LGBTQ community, and he's pretty specific about that. At the same time, given what he did in Indiana, which was to immediately sign into law a very egregious anti-LGBTQ piece of legislation, he also pranced away from that pretty quickly when he came under fire from economic interests in the state. So he's not totally unmovable on the issue, shall we say.
I just find it interesting. It seems like a departure from even what we've seen 6 months, a year and a half ago on particularly trans issues, these supposed bathroom bills, some really visible political issues that didn't seem to make it to the campaign trail.
Well, just leaving the presidential campaign for a minute, my understanding that in North Carolina, Pat McCrory, the governor who had really pushed House Bill 2, which is the so-called bathroom bill in North Carolina, has, at last I heard, that was too close to call, but he was losing that election. So there is some good news on the transgender front in the country. Now, I haven't heard whether that election's been called or not.
It has not.
It has not, and might not be for weeks by the time they do a recount. An interesting thing, Sean, you mentioned that, or Glenda, one of you mentioned that it sort of never came up, despite the fact that it had been such a key issue before, and certainly the trans bills had been floating around a lot. But neither did climate change.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just astonishing the things that didn't get talked about in the campaign for president of the country.
Such an interesting point that you make, and important to notice not just what's being discussed on the campaign trail, but often what's missing and what implications that has, particularly given some of the really visible gains for particularly, I'm thinking of same-sex marriage or issues that were really seen as key victories for the LGBTQ community.
and sitting quietly behind the front of the stage in the last 8 years have been over 200 executive actions mm-hmm. that Obama penned that were in support of the LGBTQ community, including a whole rash of things that were very important for trans folks who are not covered under most state laws at all. And so those are up for grabs right now.
And those are the sorts of things that could be most easily reversed. Mm-hmm. Marriage equality would take some doing to get reversed. These sort of executive orders that Glenda is talking about, Trump could just issue his own executive orders reversing a raft of them.
So, which he has said he will do.
That's what he could do on day one. Right. He truly could do that with a stroke of a pen.
And I want to get into that perhaps a little bit later in the show when we start thinking about what are the real implications moving forward and what does that mean for mobilization or reaction from the LGBTQ community. But now let's move to the responses to the election results. I want to just kind of explore what reactions to the election results are we noticing within the queer community. And why might the election results be so difficult for some to process, given that at least from what many of us may have seen in our relationships or in the communities that we belong to, a really strong reaction. And before we get into this, I just want to remind listeners, we really encourage you to call in if you do have a question or comment tonight. So remember to call into the studio, just dial 303-442-4242. Janice, do you want to get us started on that particular question about the impact of the election results on the LGBTQ community?
Sure. I think it's my experience, at least what I've been hearing, is sort of a morphing kind of target as people process slowly over time. Everybody is saying they're better today than they were yesterday. It happens that I work with a women's chorus of about 125 people, and that chorus met for rehearsal on Thursday night, so a day after the returns had come through. And we spent a little bit of time with people just sharing their feelings, and the preponderance of reaction still at that point was anger and sadness and surprise and depression and hopelessness and just that whole range of really negative, the sort of immediate kind of stuff. When surprise, a lot of people express surprise and just the understandable response to something that feels like such a huge loss. The grief is like amazing. And I really spent some time asking myself, what was I grieving about? And I can think of a number of things, a loss of the election, the loss of an election that could have been the first woman president, the loss of a whole bunch of values, the enactment of values that I really believe in, and a loss of my sense of who the country is and how well I know the nation. When half of the populace had voted in a way that felt just unconscionable to me, and I really had to think about, okay, there's something I don't know enough about, I don't understand. So quite a range of responses. Initially really painful ones, and gradually more, okay, what can we do? How can I get active? How can I, claim my power back?
I think one thing you didn't mention in that list that was otherwise pretty extensive was fear. Mm-hmm. And I think that one of the predominant issues that I've been hearing over the past week, nearly a week, has been the fear. And partly I think that's because the president-elect has not given us a very consistent track record for figuring out what his intentions might be. And that makes uncertainty the sort of rule of the day. And we know from a lot of research that we can cope with things a lot better if we sort of know there's an end point, know exactly what's going to happen. Here, we don't know much of anything. We certainly can say that he's surrounding himself with people who have not been friends to our community. But that's about all we can say.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. What about, and I want to explore this a little further, I mean, folks that may have, let's say, for example, voted for Trump who believe, listen, we got to win. Your side didn't. What's the big deal? Let's move on. Why is this so difficult? Any thoughts on that?
Well, I just picking up on what Glenda was saying, there's so much fear, in part because of the uncertainty, and in part because of the track record that are part the people that are part of Trump's team. You know, I'm speaking for my knowledge of the trans community, there is a lot of fear just reading Facebook posts. And I know Nina and Greta from Trans Lifeline, which is a suicide crisis line specifically for the trans community, and that I believe it was Thursday evening of last week between 8 p.m. and 2 a.m., they received in that six-hour period a volume of calls that was equal to the average volume of calls that they would get in a day prior to the election. So, yeah. You know, that's one small measure of the fear that's going on out there in the trans community, in the wider queer community. And, you know, suicide crisis lines overall in general have been maxed out, and they can't take all the calls that are coming in. And so it's just really been very hard on a lot of people, I think.
I think part of what needs to be put into perspective about that is that the range of reactions people have had are entirely normal. These are not pathological reactions. It is normal when you feel targeted to have that kind of reaction, or a whole bunch of reactions. And in that sense, they need to be normalized and understood. It also needs to be stressed that those won't last for 4 years. They are temporary. Hopefully, we won't have reason to keep having to react. It's possible we will, but at this point, we don't know that. But a piece of that is we know from a lot of social science research that when rhetoric is out there in the public domain that targets particular people, it feels bad. It has psychological and social consequences for people, and that's a part of what we're seeing. I think, in retrospect, there were people who felt targeted by earlier elections, but not in that same way in terms of having people getting up and calling them bad names and saying bad things about them and suggesting that, you know, bad things of one kind or another should happen to them. So I think that's a real part of the explanation. When a group, and here we have many groups, are specifically targeted, you're going to get scared. That's a reasonable reaction.
Especially when the person at the center of this storm, the Republican candidate, is encouraging violence from the podium at his events. It's really, really scary for people.
Right.
You're talking about examples of when Trump, either consented or even in some instances
incited
a reaction.
Get him out of here.
Punch him. Hit him. Yeah. You know, I mean,
remember the day when we would have taken that guy out on a stretcher?
So these are, you know, just a sampling of reactions. And Glenda, I think you're bringing up a good point that this rhetoric has a very strong impact. That is not just words.
It is not true that sticks and stones will break my bones, but words will never hurt me. That's not true.
Right, exactly. And we could point to the fact that this election was singular and novel in many ways. And I think we could point to this particular instance of how, you know, in the particular ways in which marginalized communities were pointed out, identified, and rhetoric was used that really built upon stereotypes rather than seeking to tear them down.
Yeah.
You know, one aspect that relates to this, I think, that I'm still trying to figure out is how much does this mean that America is a country of homophobes and racists and misogynists, and how to take this. And, you know, when I realized that actually there were districts that in 2008 and 2012 voted for Obama, and in 2016 they voted for Trump.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that people were willing to maybe overlook the racism and homophobia and xenophobia and misogyny of Trump in order to make a point about wanting change.
Yeah.
And I still haven't sorted it out, but I think that my initial reaction was really feeling, I just don't know if I can live in this country anymore.
Yeah.
And it's a little more complicated than that.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I think you're touching on, Joel, this point that there are many Trump supporters that don't buy into that hateful rhetoric and to some of the beliefs that maybe a subsection of his following do believe. And yet it seems like nonetheless that rhetoric had an impact, and that perhaps the campaign and the president-elect and the party have to in some ways answer for that the fact that there is a subset of the population that does hold those beliefs exists and is now a part of the conversation.
And I think that a part of it that we all have to pay attention to, Hillary Clinton actually called out in, I think it was the second debate, when she said, "I think implicit bias is a problem for all of us." I think we all grew up holding beliefs like the ones that Trump expressed because we live in a culture that fosters, that has grown those beliefs and that teaches them in subtle and unsubtle ways. The task is to manage to work through that. But to do that, you have to actually do something. And so I think part of what Trump did was call out the beliefs that many people have held and not really challenged. We told them they can't have them, so they've been quiet about them. And he said, "Go ahead, say it. Say the words the way I do." And they did.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Outsources on KGNU Boulder, Denver. I'm your host, Sean Kenny, and I'm in the studio tonight with Outsources Collective members Angela Palermo, Joel Edelstein, Janice Bohan, and Glenda Russell. We're using our show this week as an opportunity to debrief the U.S. presidential election and the impact that the election has had and will have on the LGBTQ community. I want to just remind our listeners that we want to encourage you to call in if you have a question or comment tonight for our Outsources Collective members here. You can call us at 303-442-4242. Before the break, we talked about the emotional toll of the election and the results from last week. For those that are struggling deeply with this outcome here, and in particular the rhetoric and policies that we've been talking about referenced during the Trump campaign, what can people do to take care of themselves and their community? Glenda, do you want to start with this one?
Sure. I think we could sort of divide up what's going on into three spheres of influence. And the first is the immediate atmosphere, the immediate aftermath. And we've been talking about that. We talked about that before the break a lot. All of those feelings that come flooding in and sort of recede a little bit, come back. And I think a lot of people have been getting hit by them. As time goes by, our next task is to figure out how to channel those feelings into something more productive.
And I want to go now to a question caller. We've got Preston on the line. Preston?
Hi. Thanks so much for your program. And I just had a couple comments, a couple thoughts came to mind listening to the discussion. I try to keep in mind that although Trump got about half of the voters, fewer than Hillary, and also I think only about half of those registered actually voted, mm-hmm. and then there's tens of millions of other people who aren't even registered, mm-hmm. and these people tend to be further left, even further left than liberals. So I'm thinking it's more like a quarter of the population that can be persuaded by the antipathy towards gays and Muslims and so many other immigrants and others. Also, they're very mobilized. They're very active and engaged. They've blanketed the country with right-wing talk radio. Hosts like Dennis Prager, they think gay rights is a threat to Western civilization. They frighten people, and they get in their heads for 3 hours a day, followed by another host for 3 hours and another host for 3 hours. I think until progressives get some sort of participatory media, you know, expand KGNU, link to KGNU into programs like this on Facebook, there again, I think social media has been very helpful to us, but the right wing is using it very effectively, too. Trump has Facebook pages like one group called the Deplorables, which right. has about 500,000 participants. But you can engage it. It can be kind of brutal at times, the viciousness and the sexism and the racism is just off the charts.
Yeah.
But you can drop links and hope for the best.
That's true. Yeah. Thanks so much for that question, Preston. Really touching on this issue of the election result may not tell the whole story in terms of, the actual, public vote and what's going on there.
Let me just also say one other thing about that. What Preston is doing in the first part of his comment is what all of us have to do, which is find a way to think about this whole election in terms that allows us to not feel powerless. And when he talks about the people who didn't vote and the closeness of the race and the fact that we actually won by over a million votes, that's the beginning of an appraisal that works for us and makes it possible to go forward.
And I want to go now to another caller that we have online. Carla?
Yeah. Hi, Sean. Thank you for taking my call.
Absolutely.
I have a question for all of you. I work in the schools, and I've been feeling really hopeful that we've made a lot of progress to have safe communities for our kids. And given what just happened, my question is, as family, friends, and allies of all people, especially our LGBTQ people and our youth, what can we do? Give me some ideas of how to support the youth I work with.
Great.
And their families and communities.
Thanks so much for that question, Carla. Glenda, do you want to take that one?
Sure. And be a visible ally. I assume you have been, continue to be a visible ally. What that means is talking with students. I don't care what age they are, what grade they're in. Talking with students about we have a classroom where everybody's respected, and then allow yourself to have LGBTQ issues around other cultures in the curricula, and you can do it so many ways. But keep doing what you've been doing. That really needs to keep happening, and it has a profound influence.
And I think be willing to build coalitions, not just talk about LGBT rights,
yes,
but talk about immigrant rights, talk about the rights of African Americans, talk about the rights of Muslims and
poor people.
Pull all those together.
Excellent.
And take advantage of the community resources that are available. Some of us were in a meeting today with people from Out Boulder and a group called A Queer Endeavor, who are working really hard in the schools in the Boulder and St. Vrain Valley school systems to deal with these issues. This is a wonderful question, a wonderful issue, Carla, and I'm so glad you brought it up
yeah,
for us to
thank you for mentioning those great resources, which I tap into all the time. And
great.
And yeah, we all need to stand together. So
Amen. Thank you for calling.
All right.
Thanks again, Carla. And we can continue on this discussion of what people can do for self-care. But I also just want to move on to this next step, which is our conversation is naturally leading into, which is what's next. So in terms of next steps for the queer community and the LGBTQ community, what do we know thus far about the president-elect's position on issues relevant to the community, and what implications does this have for organizing, for action, ensuring the queer community's voice has a presence moving forward? Any thoughts on that?
Well, I just want to say that at this point, early stage of the game, it's hard to know exactly what policy proposals are going to come down our way. But what we can say is look at the folks that Trump has appointed to his transition team. He has appointed Steve Bannon, his chief strategist, and Bannon is an infamous white supremacist and seems like an anti-Semite as well.
This is the former editor of Breitbart.
Right. He has Mike Pence is his running mate, and has appointed him as head of the transition team, and Pence has a long track record of being a homophobe and a transphobe as governor of Indiana. He has Ben Carson as the deputy director of the transition team. He's also very anti-LGBT. He's a creationist, climate denier. I mean, it goes on and on. So all we can say is we know who he's put in positions of power in his transition team, and that doesn't speak well to the prospects of the GLBT community in the coming years.
I think the other side of that, and I absolutely agree with everything you just said, Angela, the other side of that is I don't think we've had a time that is that is a better setup for coalition building and working together with other groups who are have been targeted to make really positive change in this country. You know, most of the time a group gets sort of pushed to the side and targeted. This time, so many of us have been targeted, and I think the possibility for coalition building is there, and I think we can do it.
I just, a quickie, that's true in the, even outside of the particular groups that have been targeted, so has climate change. The person that Trump has appointed to as the transition team leader for the Environmental Protection Agency is a climate change denier. So there are just so many issues where we can work together with folks, and collectively, we are not a minority. I keep saying this.
You've been listening to Outsources on KGNU Boulder, Denver. I'm Sean Kenny, and I've been in the studio this evening with Outsources Collective member Glenda Russell, Janice Bohan, Angela Palermo, and Joel Edelstein as we discuss the U.S. presidential election and its impacts on the LGBTQ community. I also want to thank Michelle with KGNU for handling the phones, and I want to thank all of our listeners tonight for calling in and sharing their questions and input with us. If you have additional questions or concerns, but we weren't able to get to on tonight's show, we encourage you to email outsources@kgnu.org. Your voice is important, and we want to make sure that we have a chance to hear it and that you're a part of the Outsources community. For more information about some of the resources that we discussed or alluded to in today's show, go online to our website at news.kgnu.org and click on Outsources under the Shows and Features tab. Once there, you can also listen to the recording of this conversation. And as always, let us know if you have comments or feedback at outsources@kgnu.org. Join us next week, Monday at 6:30 p.m., for another episode of Outsources, where we'll be bringing you more homegrown queer programming. That's every Monday, 6:30 p.m., right here on KGNU. Or listen anytime after the broadcast at kgnu.org/outsources. I'm Sean Kenny, and you've been listening to Outsources, KGNU, Boulder, Denver.